Hello again, and welcome to Ecosystemic Futures Podcast. I'm your host, Diane Finkhausen, founder and CEO of Shoshimworks, a global advisory firm for ecosystems and organizational transformation. As the world is becoming increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping the fundamental frameworks within society, industry, economy, and policy, reframing how we innovate and build for resilient futures. In this series, brought to you by Shoshimworks in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project, we're exploring these ecosystemic models and impacts across every facet of society. And today we're wrapping up our deep dive into scenarios with Shell's Chief Political Analyst, Geraldine Wessing. If you haven't heard the previous two episodes, we would strongly encourage you to go grab those and give those a listen. My co-host today is James Villarubia from NASA. Welcome, James.
Thanks, Diane. Hello, everyone. I'm James Villarubia. I'm currently a Presidential Innovation Fellow with NASA, where I'm helping the engineers and the scientists there use AI to imagine and design better futures for humanity. I started my career as a statistician and technology policy wonk at the White House, the DOJ, DOD. I've done a fair number of startups from education to healthcare. So I've been around in a lot of sectors, a lot of areas. So I'm always really excited to talk about someone who is applying sort of methodology on a global scale and tackling lots of different industries and areas of input. So happy to continue our conversation today. And now I will get that started. So welcome, Geraldine, back. Shell, you're so grateful for your time and in sharing the history and the value and the potential scenarios we talked about sort of in the last episode. So really give us insight into the security scenarios that Shell has mapped out and has been sharing broadly for the last 50 years, I think, maybe more than that. So over to you, Geraldine.
Thank you, James. Yes, thank you, Diane. It's really wonderful to be back with you. I'm almost sorry this is the last episode we're going to do together, but so I'm Geraldine Wessing, and I am the Chief Political Analyst in the Shell Scenarios team. And really what I do, I pull in the geopolitical trends and the political analysis into the scenarios work that we produce. So really looking at those trends and those sort of driving forces around politics, but also self-proclaimed geek of scenarios and everything and anything to do with scenarios. So I'm constantly looking for ways to innovate and improve the way that we actually are applying scenarios. And I've said before, I really want us to just stay honest. So always reminding myself of the core principles and the mindset of scenarios and trying to keep us practicing those.
Well, geeks are always welcome in the show. So you're among friends here. Thank you, Geraldine. So excited to have you again.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, to that point, I am a fellow kind of systems and process geek. I have a long history of disruption and business model innovation. I think it's fascinating to kind of look at how a change is washing over markets and organizations today and think about how we can navigate through this very dynamic landscape and craft a better path forward. So James and Geraldine, really excited about the conversation today. We've really kind of set the stage in the previous episodes. We've set the stage for how we can look at broad scale change globally, make sense of that, and start to organize that into, if we're thinking about the ecosystem of the global community, how we organize the very dramatic and constant change that's washing over markets today, synthesize that into kind of archetypes of different scenarios and different actors, and begin to think about what motivations may be coming into play in the decisions and the actions taken by those actors in that context. And so where it would be interesting to focus our conversation today is how we can use that information and those systems, those methodologies, in order to create systems to design for a greater ecosystemic wellness, right? In this context of very dramatic and impactful change, how can we start to create frameworks where actors can be potentially incented to make decisions and take actions that drive better outcomes for the ecosystem as a whole? So we think about maybe that as a goal for the conversation today. Geraldine, maybe if you could just talk to us a little bit about Shell's process and approach to framing the scenarios, and then how we might use that information to set up the stage for decisions and actions that encourage basically better pathways versus kind of self-interest, self-optimization by the actors in that landscape. Geraldine, your thoughts?
So let me just talk about that landscape that you were just so beautifully describing. Shell is an energy company, but it's operating in an environment where there are, as we could say, three levels of transition taking place, right? So we have transition at a global level. We are witnessing paradigmatic change at a global scale, right? We are now in a period of flux because we are at an end of an era that started after the Second World War, and we are now entering something different. Now, whether that's going to look like, we don't know, but it's going to have massive repercussions on global markets, on how we trade, but also on global norms, right? So that's the first layer of transition that's taking place. The second layer of transition for us as an energy company is the energy system itself, because we are, of course, decarbonizing our energy systems across industries, across sectors, transport being one of them, but even buildings. Anything that consumes energy is going through an energy transition. So energy systems in countries all over the world right now are redesigning how their future energy systems are going to look. And it's not an easy process, I can tell you. And then the third layer of transition is, well, we are a company in transition, right? So we were a fossil fuel company. We are now already a diversified company. And in the future, we will likely be not one of the last fossil fuel producing companies. That will probably be one of the national oil companies, let's be honest. The IOCs will transition away. So we are also a company in transition. So when you take those three layers into account, really trying to think about using scenarios and systems thinking, not just to make your organization more resilient, but actually to think about how your organization fits into that broader context or those broader contexts of change is absolutely vital. There's no other way of actually thinking about the future without recognizing that you are very much in flux as well, just as much as your surrounding environment. So I think that's really where I would like to start with. And for me, the scenarios process is such a magical tool, because what it does is it, first of all, it forces you to think about what are those driving forces that are conducive of change, right? And how are they different from the past? It forces you to gain a better understanding of the very different perspectives that are out there, really driving those forces, if you like. So you have to collaborate, you have to understand, you have to seek out different voices. And so for me, therefore, inherently the process humbles you. It forces you to reach out and make partnerships and connections. And it gives you, I think, a greater sense of repercussions and unintended consequences, as well as feedback loops that your decisions, as well as others' decisions, could have.
So I'd like to follow up on that. So you mentioned the driving forces that sort of go into these changes. I guess that sort of speaks towards it inputs into the system. If we sort of extract that out, I'm trying to think of sort of how you might, as a process, as a methodology, identify those driving forces. What are the inputs to your process besides the fact of a pandemic or a war? I mean, those are some obvious, but the sort of the nitty gritty details of who are you talking to, or where are you collecting your information to get to these sort of better ideas?
So once my day job is basically what you're asking, right, James?
Yes.
So perfect question. So the scenarios team in Shell is a multidisciplinary team. So we actually have embedded within our team experts from very different backgrounds. So we have a climate sort of change expert. We have obviously the energy experts and the engineers and the geologists and the physicists and those guys, because we are a technical company. But we also have the political analyst and the historian like me, and we have the economists. Right. So we have our geographer as well, who is an expert in the geopolitics of the energy transition. Right. So we have lots of different lenses within our team. And you mentioned something there around, is it when a crisis occurs? No. We are constantly perusing the external environment for signals. Now, the interesting thing about us is because, of course, we already have a set of scenarios. So we have a framework against which to test whether signals and signposts are actually within the boundaries of our scenarios and whether they are leaning more towards one scenario or another scenario in different contexts, because that would indicate which way we're going, right? We have that advantage. But nevertheless, even if we didn't, the job at hand is to be constantly monitoring for those signals and signposts in your external environment. You are looking for things that confirm sort of the trajectory that you think you're on. But actually, more interestingly, you're looking for those signals and signposts that are telling you something different, telling you something new, that are really pointing to a different direction or the possibility of change. That's what you're looking for. But you cannot do that alone, because you as an individual have a set of assumptions, preconditions, biases based on your education, where you were born, how you were raised, the language that you speak, crying out loud. All of those things, you are just one person. So you will be picking up very different signals and signposts to me, to Diane, to everybody who's listening to this podcast right now. So what we do is we reach out constantly to experts. Now, my favorite experts are academics. I absolutely geek out with academics. And of course, my area of expertise is geopolitics, but also scenario planning. So my favorite experts are really those experts who are looking at geoeconomics, the geopolitics, or national level politics as well. What's happening in the Middle East right now is really interesting, for instance. And I'm fascinated. So I think for me, I would say starter for 10, that's really what you've got to do. And once you get into that practice, actually, quite frankly, you don't stop. You just don't stop. That becomes a natural sort of process of everyday thinking. So diversity in your team, diversity in the range of experts that you connect with constantly. Obviously, a lot of reading, right? There's a lot of research online and stuff like that. And actually, where your area, your AI sort of expertise can also start helping, because there is so much material out there. How can we have technology help us to peruse through so much data and actually pick out those nuances and those new pieces of information?
Yeah. And that's exactly what I think NASA is trying to do, is that struggling to, again, sort of imagine 30, 40 years out. So you have to peruse a lot of information and get to that. But I also want to sort of call out and thank you for referencing your geographer, because I feel sort of frustrated when trying to talk about futurism with people. The geopolitical, the first part of that is geo from geography. Yes. And while like we think of geography as a class we took as kids, but you know, borders are imaginary on a map, but mountains and access to ports and resources and mines are very real. And the war in Ukraine tells us as much, as a lot of the strategy we see playing out is about access to ports, to resources, and how it is echoing into the scenarios of design, or sort of we're talking about, is about access to these resources. So geography is cool, kids. Like, it's not a...
Excellent. I love it. Absolutely love it. But there's a really interesting thing here around sort of, we say the future is accelerating because of technology, but at the same time, very real constraints in the very physical world will continue to hamper us, right? So even though we have this idea that we've moved into the next sort of stage of the economic sort of industrial revolution, if you like, actually, when it comes to infrastructure and logistics, yeah, mountains, we can't yet move them. You're right.
Yeah. Same applies to industry, right? Where we're talking about global geopolitical kind of landscape, or the landscaping in any given industrial sector, right? Or economic sector, you're mapping, right? The context and the assets and the gaps and the motivations, the incentive structures. And I'm really designing a strategy to navigate to beneficial outcomes, right? So that I think the framework and the methodology can apply at a number of levels, and if our audience can take a lot of pages out of your journey and your book, Gerald, if we think about that and just think about the takeaways, the key recommendations for our audience, whether they're dealing with the global geopolitical landscape, or if they're dealing with, right, a competitive landscape, say in healthcare, right, in any given market. How do these frameworks and methodologies help can our audience use these methodologies to make better decisions, take better actions, and actually influence decisions in a more beneficial direction versus a self-interested direction? How can that ecosystem move together in a way that drives better outcomes overall?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think the wonderful thing about the shell assets is that it's an asset. It's a common good asset. It's there. It's online. Go to it. Use it. And the best way to use the scenarios, to my mind, is to really appreciate them as the range, right? This is the plausible range. And we're going to be fluctuating somewhere in between over the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Or however many years actually you want to think, right? And however many years you're interested in your organization. So use the scenarios to really test how resilient you are within your ecosystem against the full range of those scenarios, right? Really ask yourself, is your current strategy actually going to be resilient? Are you even going to thrive in either of these scenarios? And in the areas where you don't believe that you're going to be resilient or you're going to be successful, why is that? And you really need to now take a step back, because I think one of the things, it's one of the principles that you have to just keep reminding yourself, is we make so many assumptions about our business, about our relationships, about, and in the first episode, we talked about discontinuities between the Arab producing states and the Western growing economies of the 1960s and 1970s, right? Assumptions about what you believe is the truth and will continue to be the truth need to be constantly tested. And these scenarios give you an opportunity to do that. But again, when you look at your strategy and you think you may be resilient against everything, just be really humble and ask yourself the question, what assumptions am I basing that on? Is it because I know that my customers will always be there? Is it because I know that my relationships will always understand where I'm coming from or agree to support my cause? Will they always be interested? Will they always be in my corner? And really test yourself against these scenarios to see if you get different outcomes. And then if you do get different outcomes, and if you do see deficits in your strategy or in your operating environment, think about, well, then what do I need to do to rectify that? And it comes back to perspectives. What are the perspectives of the different stakeholders and how do they behave differently in the two scenarios? Because they do, they behave differently. Why is that? Try and understand the driving forces behind the different responses that these stakeholders choose to make. And that can also help then inform your engagement strategy, your supply or your customer strategy to think about, well, their needs are going to be different. How can I meet those needs differently? So that would be, and that's really a very simple way. None of this is rocket science, really, but it's really more about understanding human behavior, because it all comes down to humans behaving differently in different contexts. So we've done the work in terms of producing the scenarios for you. Use them. They're there, right? But think about how do your stakeholders behave differently in the two scenarios? And how do they relate to you differently?
I love that. I love that. And we're so grateful for you and the Shell team for doing that heroic work for us and giving us that access to that wealth of perspective and insight. And I think I just heard, James, if you agree, the formula for success and resilience in this crazy digital economy, I'm hearing curiosity, collaboration, humility, perspective, and constant kind of vigilance in assessing and reassessing not only your landscape, but your assumptions. So to keep it real. James, any last thoughts before we close things out for today?
Yeah, I mean, you sort of summed it up really well there. One of the last takeaway is I do think it has reflected in my brain about the more you read, the more you absorb this information, the more you realize you were wrong. And the sort of more you have to read. So it is a curiosity, a winding path to go down, but it is worthwhile, particularly if you want to be a leader that induces change in your organization and prepares for resilience. So it's humility to recognize that you were wrong, but also a willingness to keep learning. So I think that's a really great takeaway. Thank you so much, Geraldine. But Geraldine, I mean, you've been entrenched in this work. What is one thing that you want to leave the audience with now that we have sort of a solid overview of your work?
So first thing is that you've got to go to shell.com/scenarios. They're called the energy security scenarios. You will find a wealth. It's like a treasure trove in there. Have a look. There's so much data in there. I am sure that there's something in there for everyone. Please use it. And the second one, yeah, I'm sorry, but you've already said it, but it is for me. That's what it all boils down to. It is humility. It is humility. I think the more that you do this kind of work, the more humble you become. That, as you said, it's a winding road, but it really is. The more you find out, the more you realize you don't know anything. you really don't know anything. And you really do. I realize increasingly that I really am just one of the 7.5 billion people on this planet. And I'd really like to speak to every single one of these people. I never will in my lifetime. But humanity, I just don't know. And I never will. I will never know enough about how this world works. So that's what I'm going to leave everybody with, is just this sense of hopelessness that I will never know exactly how everything works.
I love it. I love it. Well, a great lesson for all of us and for all of our listeners, right? If we do nothing but shift from knowing organizations to learning organizations, that's half the battle right there.
Yes. So, yes.
Man, Geraldine, thank you so much. That time just flew by, and we greatly appreciate your perspective, all the noble work that you and you, your team and your community are doing. And I'm sure our audience will be a path quickly to your scenarios treasure trove. And again, audience, if you just joined us for this episode, please be sure to catch up with the two previous episodes. We're here with Geraldine Wessing discussing the history of scenarios and the Shell scenario planning process, and how we can all kind of take a few pages from that journey and that good work and take that back to our own lives and daily operations. So if you enjoy this, please join us, continue to join us for the next Ecosystemic Futures podcast, brought to you by Shoshaworks in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project, in which we'll continue to explore topics with world-class experts who are working hard to look ahead and design for ecosystemic wellness. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite place to access those podcasts, and you can learn more always at shoshaworks.com. Thanks so much.